Manila Chan. You are tuned into Modus Operandi. In light of the unfolding tragedies in Israel and Gaza, the U.S. has shifted its attention away from Ukraine. But America isn't the only one. Ukraine's own neighbors, just months ago, pledging unwavering support, now souring on Kyiv as fresh elections prove the prolonged war in Europe isn't as popular as it was sold. All right, let's get into the MO. From former Soviet bloc states to the farthest reaching west of France, little by little, European support for a continued war effort in Ukraine appears to be waning, led by growing right-leaning sentiments among voters dissatisfied with their economic situation at home, are now forcing political elites to reconsider sending taxpayer-funded military aid to Ukraine. Joining us to dig into this shift across Europe is George Samueli. He is a writer and senior fellow at the Global Policy Institute in London. He's the author of the book Bombs for Peace, NATO's Humanitarian War on Yugoslavia. He also has a daily podcast with Peter Lavelle called The Gaggle. You can find them on locals.com. So first, George, before we get into the former Soviet bloc countries, I got to address the 800-pound gorilla in the room that is the U.S., who has been the biggest financial and military backer of Ukraine. That gorilla appears to have shifted its gaze away from Ukraine over now to Israel after the Hamas attack on civilians in Israel proper. National Security Council spokesman John Kirby had this to say about further funding.
In the near term, we've got appropriations and authorities for both Ukraine and for Israel. But you don't want to be trying to bake in long-term support when you're at the end of the rope. And in Ukraine, on the Ukraine funding, we're coming near to the end of the rope. I mean, today we announced $200 million, and we'll keep that aid going as long as we can, but it's not going to be indefinite. So are we moving with a sense of alacrity? Absolutely. I couldn't give you a date certain on the calendar.
So what do you make of that comment, George? Has the U.S. abandoned Kyiv?
I really don't think so. I think he's referring to the impasse that has been achieved in the House of Representatives. There is a lot of opposition among Republican congressmen to any more assistance to Ukraine. And so basically the Biden administration is at the moment having real difficulties moving any kind of appropriation for Ukraine. Now, that on top of the preoccupation with the Middle East obviously has put Ukraine on the back burner. However, there's a majority in both the House and the Senate to go on funding Ukraine. There's not a majority among the Republican conference, but overall, since the Democrats are unanimous behind Ukraine, and the Republican senators are by and large, with the odd exception like Rand Paul or J.D. Vance, they're again in favor of sending more money to Ukraine. So I think they are going to come up with the money. I mean, the numbers are there, the support is there, but at the moment, there is this impasse. There isn't a House Speaker, and nobody really knows what's going to happen in the Middle East. I mean, who knows? This could explode. American involvement could escalate. But my feeling is that Ukraine is such a good gig for so many wealthy, well-connected individuals in the United States. You know, obviously, the arms contractors, the military-industrial complex, the think tanks that are funded by the military-industrial complex, financiers who are being bankrolled by the U.S. government, ostensibly that they're going to be rebuilding Ukraine. There's a lot of monetary, financial interest tied up with Ukraine. I don't think they're just going to let it go and say, oh, well, forget it, let's go on to something else. So I think for the time being, yeah, I think that there's no money for Ukraine, but I think, you know, within a few weeks there will be money.
Slovakia recently held parliamentary elections that found the former PM, Robert Fico's populist left party, the Smer SSD, winning and forming a coalition government rather quickly. Their platform pledged to halt all military aid to Ukraine, but they deny being pro-Russian. Meanwhile, Fico has been known to refer to the Russian foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov, as a dear friend. Are these mixed signals coming from Bratislava, or do you think this accurately reflects the sentiments of the Slovakian citizens?
I think it does reflect the Slovakian citizens. I think what that election showed, that in Slovakia and in many European countries, standard of living is going down, inflation is on the rise. You know, there is the continuing surge of migrants, with governments not really able to cope with this flow of migrants, and people are really getting tired of this war because the war is impoverishing Europeans, and ultimately the Slovakians, like the Hungarians, are asking, well, what are we getting out of this? So leave aside the question of the danger of the escalation, the danger of getting involved in a serious shooting war with Russia. You know, voters are just wondering, what exactly are we getting out of this war? And I think Fico clearly, you know, spoke to this concern, much as Viktor Orban did, but Orban did that from the beginning. And I think that the politicians, the leading politicians of Europe, like, you know, Macron or Chancellor Scholz, and of course, you know, the head queen, Ursula von der Leyen, they're preoccupied with Ukraine. But they've not been able to explain in any way to the peoples of Europe what's in it for them. Why exactly is this great commitment being made for Ukraine? What are the stakes here? Why is it that the Europeans need to be fighting this war against Russia in Russia's backyard? You know, how is anyone in Europe benefiting from it? So. That's why Fico says that we're not particularly well disposed towards Russia. We're not particular friends with Russia. That's why all this in the media, which spin it as, oh, he's pro-Russian. They say the same thing about Orban. It's pro-Russian, which is complete nonsense. Neither Fico nor Orban is pro-Russian. They represent their people, and they just simply say this war makes very little sense. You know, and particularly, if we're steadily becoming poorer and poorer, our standard of living is going down. And there's another winter coming up. Could be a colder winter. Last winter was mild. This could be a quite cold winter. Where's the fuel going to come from? You know, already this is triggering inflation in our countries. It's getting harder and harder to justify this Ukraine caper, and I think that explains Fico's victory.
Now, speaking of the Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban, he has, as some might describe it, gone against the NATO grain in the way of Ukraine support. I mean, not to mention within his own borders, promoting a very socially conservative, you know, Christian values type of rhetoric, especially after USAID boss Samantha Power made an unannounced visit to the country. Orban has been strongly against the promotion of alternative lifestyles, if you will. So this doesn't really align with U.S. agendas for democracies. He's been criticized for not being strong enough against Vladimir Putin as well. Despite being an EU and NATO member state, Orban doesn't appear to be on the same boat as the others. Does this, in effect, put Hungary back within the Russian sphere of influence?
No, it really doesn't. Hungary's position is that, you know, while in a kind of pro forma way, it supports EU policy toward Russia on Ukraine. So sanctions, by and large, you know, Hungary supports the sanctions policy, obviously condemning Russia and so on. At the same time, Hungary is saying, well, no, we're going to have cutouts for ourselves. You know, we need oil, we need gas, we need a Russian cooperation on the nuclear power, and we're going to go on signing agreements with Russia. You know, they've just signed another agreement just the other day. So that's, you know, the position of Orban and Szijjártó, his foreign minister, is that we will do whatever we need to do in favor of Hungarian national interest. That's our job. You know, we were elected to work on behalf of Hungary, and we're going to do it. And now where we can agree with the EU, we'll agree with the EU, but always our eyes are on what's in Hungary's interest. Now, that is combined with Orban's position, which is that this war makes no sense for the obvious reason. He said this many times, Ukraine cannot win this war. Russia will not lose this war. There's no way that Russia will just simply accept defeat. Therefore, what is the logical step that Europe needs to take, which it is to bring this war to an end, to essentially demand an immediate ceasefire, immediate armistice, and that's it. And Europe is too weak to do anything like that. The United States calls the shots. So Orban's view is now that nothing much is going to happen until there's a change of government in the United States. And Orban is explicit about this, Donald Trump returns to power, because then he says basically when Trump returns, peace will be possible in Ukraine. And to him, peace is just simply immediately, just ceasefire. You know, don't do anything, just you know, bring it to an end. So he's obviously bucking the trend within NATO. But NATO's problem with Orban, much as they find him utterly detestable, is that they don't know what to do with him. They can't very well just kick him out, because Hungary is a vital piece of real estate. I mean, it's right there in Central Europe. You can't just simply lose Hungary and keep NATO going. So he knows that he can make all these statements. He can anger the EU, NATO, and you talk about Samantha Power. Samantha Power obviously just absolutely loathes him, loathes the sort of Fidesz philosophy, as you said, the social conservatism. He's essentially, and I don't know whether you call it anti-Americanism, but certainly anti-democratic partyism. I mean, I think that he hates the America of the current Democratic Party. They would like to get him out. So they thought they had a shot in the election last year. He won by a landslide. So I think they realize now Orban has won four landslides in Hungary. There's no one really to challenge him. He's still a young man. So they know they're going to have to live with Orban for some time.
Yeah, Orban isn't going anywhere. I mean, much in the same way that Turkey's Erdogan isn't moving either. So the political class just has to figure out how to work with them. All right, coming up next, Europe's swing to the right, from Italy's Giorgia Meloni to Germany's rising AfD party. We'll discuss it when we return with George Samueli. Sit tight, the MO will be right back.